Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
What time is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I'm like to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
All right, sports fans, you put in a hell of a shift there over the weekend, and we applaud you for that. There was so much going on. The Shawnee O'Shea free for Kerry. Ireland beating New Zealand for the first time in New Zealand. Novak Djokovic beating his new best pal, Nick Kyrgios, in the Wimbledon final.
Damien Comer.
Yeah, you got to get that one in there. It was a busy one, put it that way. And you probably deserve a lie down at this point, but make it quick. Because this sporting summer is not stopping for anybody. Tonight, Euro 2022. Two of the favourites of the tournament, England versus Norway, 8 o'clock kickoff. Miguel Delaney is on his way to Brighton for that. And he's going to have a chat with us before he heads off. How are you, by the way, Kieran? Hope you're well.
I'm good on. And congratulations on attempting to say Euro 2022 tournament all in the space of 2 seconds there. That was just proud of your bravery.
Welcome everyone to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. We're also going to be talking to Miguel about the rebuilding job Chelsea are doing under their new ownership. They're making a few moves now. They've agreed to sign Raheem Sterling for around £50 million. That fee has been agreed with Man City. Looks like they're going to buy Nathan Ake from City as well at time of recording. Anyway, that seems to be the latest. They've been trying to gazump. And yes, I like using that word in transfer window territory. Gazump Man United. It's not one I generally use in conversation over the Frankie de Jong transfer. Is it too soon to discount Chelsea as possible title winners this coming season? This time last year, everybody was tipping them, and I'm not sure anybody will be this time around given everything that's gone on there, but also how strong the top two look. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's been a year for Chelsea, hasn't it? You know, in the parlance of the time, it's been a year. Considering Roman Abramovich was the owner of the club this time last year.
I should also mention for our Northern Ireland listeners, their game against Austria is first up today at the Euros at 5 o'clock. I'm not forgetting about
don't sleep on Northern Ireland, Owen. I'm
poor form.
I'm just warning you here. Don't sleep on those guys.
No, it was poor form from the whoever's in charge of the PA system at Northern Ireland's opening game against Norway. I don't know if you noticed what they were playing after the goals were going in. After Northern Ireland got their goal, and I believe the tune was also played after their goal. It had its rightful place after a Northern Ireland goal. But even after Norway were scoring, Freed from Desire was being banged out.
Will Griggs on fire. I mean, that's...
Exactly. It's almost like a troll. It's their famous...
Yeah.
It's their tune, and it was being played as the goals were going in against them.
I mean, I think it's literally the answer to the vexed, you know, Northern Irish national anthem question. You know, should it be God Save the Queen? Should it be Danny Boy? You know, I think we can all agree that that's a stone cold banger.
It is not only the Women's Euros where you can get your football hits these days. I'm sure people are searching far and wide, and many might have come across a clip from the Canadian Premier League this weekend. Valor FC against HFX Wanderers. This is the big one, of course. Valor looked to have taken the lead in the 17th minute. Alessandro Righi bundling the ball home. Where has he bundled it home? Suddenly his teammate William Akio appears on the scene.
Nicely for him. Tracks it down, opens up to his right boot. The cross towards Righi. Second effort, it dribbles it. No! Did Akio clear that off the line himself? What in the world?
All right, so what's happened there is Righi has bundled the ball towards the goal, as in he's practically on the goal line himself when he's kicking the ball. It is just about three quarters away over the line when, in out of nowhere, comes his teammate Akio to, well, what was he trying to do? The commentators suggest that he was trying to make sure the ball went over the line. I feel he was probably just trying to get the goal for himself.
Yeah, I do.
I have seen another explanation that he was actually celebrating the goal. You know, it was one of those, I'm going to blast it into the net now. And somebody on Twitter puts together a feed of these things, basically moments when players try to celebrate kicking the ball into the net after a goal, but miss. So this could fit in there, but I don't think so. I think he was trying to score the goal himself, and
yeah,
just didn't quite happen for him. It was bad.
I don't know what other reason you can give for it. I mean, it actually reminded me of a moment from my own Gaelic football career, a particularly ill-starred moment, I must say. When I was a young footballer, living in Galway, being picked up for like a junior A game on a Sunday morning. And I remember waiting at Galway Cathedral to be picked up by one of my teammates and feeling so incredibly hungover that I felt not alone was the game out of my reach, but literally the car journey for 20 minutes to Headford was going to kill me, literally kill me stone dead. And I do remember at one stage that I was like very carefully shepherding the ball out of play over the end line. And before realising, wait a second, that ball was in play. I could have just picked it up and fisted a point like really easily there. But I was like, you're like full on, like with my arse.
What does it look like?
Kind of bent over backwards.
Were you securing your team 45?
Yeah, but I mean, I could have just picked up the ball and fisted the ball over the bar. I mean, this is junior A football. If you've someone able to kick a 45, he's probably on the senior team on. So there is absolutely no doubt in the world. It was probably me going out there to kick a 45 about 30 yards up in the air. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak to the young man's pre-match preparation. That was my excuse. I don't know what this guy's excuse was.
Well, truly only William Akio knows what was going through his head as he denied his team and his teammate. I'd love to tell you that it ended up in glory for Akio, that he ended up winning the game for his team. They did win 1-0, but he was not the goal scorer.
Okay.
He was subbed off.
Well, at least they won. Later point. That was important.
That does make a bit of a difference, I think, to how everyone's feeling about this. It's time to talk to Miguel.
I accept your challenge. I call out Mickey Rourke and Steve Nash. Here we go.
Stop it.
That's one of those things.
Stop it. How many players can do this?
Can never die.
He's 34 years old. Robbie Keane continues to captivate.
It's one of those things.
Duffman can never die. Only the actors who play him.
Second chance. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Do you think Robbie Keane just said, you know what? Any questions about me being the MVP of this league? I think he just said right there.
Oh yeah.
He's got more of a tan than me.
This time last year, Chelsea were reigning European champions, and it felt like everybody was tipping them for the Premier League title. A lot obviously went pear-shaped for them in more ways than one last season. Lots happened, as they say, in the last 12 months. So how are they looking now this summer, going into their first full season in the post-Abramovich Chelsea world? Miguel Delaney is on to tell us. Hey, Miguel.
Hey, guys.
Hope you're enjoying your summer.
Yeah. It's, I suppose, given it was basically continuous football from, I think, June 2020 to June 2022, it actually felt like the last few weeks were the first kind of little break we have for those of us kind of on the Premier League, Champions League, international hamster wheel. But I've been back into it this week with the Women's Euros. But yeah, so it did feel like, I think, a continuous knock-on effect from, I suppose, the pandemic, obviously, and the crunch ahead of the 2022 World Cup, where I think that even player, I mean, it was something that came up during the discussions about the Nations League a few weeks ago, of course, but I think even players found it the most intense period of football they've ever had. So suddenly, after that, a bit more sedate.
Well, it could have been even busier for you, Miguel. I mean, we'd be talking about a World Cup final this week, wouldn't we? It's, what are we at, July 11th, normally?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought that a lot lately in terms of kind of how, I mean, obviously there's so much wrong with this Qatar World Cup, but it almost suited those organising the football calendar to have it suddenly 6 months on, because imagine how they actually had to crunch in the two seasons post-COVID and then try and get this World Cup on. But even allowing for that, and Again, I mean, this is one of the more minor negatives of what is a World Cup with some really seriously grave problems. I was reading Ollie Holt's interview with Zico 2 weeks ago, which was brilliant, about the 1982 World Cup. And it was one of those occasions when I just found myself thinking, oh, we'd be right in the middle of the tournament now. You know, this is something else this World Cup has taken away, where it's denied us that kind of glory of summer football. And even like I was around, yesterday was obviously Wimbledon final day, and I was kind of around London on a day off. And we went up to Granary Square, where they had a massive screen up showing the final, and it was absolutely packed. People were even on little kind of boats in the canal watching it. And of course, that would, for a summer World Cup, that would be a perfect setting to show a game. And you could, and given what a World Cup is, they could be showing games there all the time. But I mean, it's another one of the little things. Obviously, again, pales in comparison next to the big problems of this World Cup. But like, it's going to be an interesting one, given usually we associate a lot of World Cup with a lot of kind of, you know, outside watching football, which isn't really possible in England or Ireland in November and December.
Mm.
But yeah, it was just something else that struck me yesterday. It's almost that rite of passage, really, about what a World Cup is about, isn't it? It's summer football and just dominating everything.
Yeah, well, it leaves the way clear for the Women's World Cup, and there'll be plenty gathering in those kind of places. I would say, Miguel, if tonight's game goes well, we can come back to Chelsea, but you mentioned England, they're playing Norway this evening, and this is in many ways the big game of the group phase, certainly the big game in this group. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, and certainly it feels like it's England's one really big game of the group stage. So, I mean, it'll probably decide whether they're first or second, and then whether they get to play in London or not for the quarterfinal, potentially setting that path. It has felt like it's all building up to this so far. I was at the game on Wednesday, which was a capacity crowd at Old Trafford. Everything was really, really good about it, bar the weather. I'd come up from 30 degrees in London almost to sideways lashing rain in Manchester. But it was still a great atmosphere around it. It does feel like the England, or the kind of population, has actually quite taken to the national team. Obviously, the rest of the tournament's been a little bit of a matter of debate, especially where some of the games are at and some of the stadiums being used. But that's why it's almost a little bit odd tonight. So, like, I'm going down to Brighton for this game. Brighton, you know, great setup down there, nice stadium. But it's around 30,000. Whereas every England game at the moment, in a tournament that's otherwise, where crowds have been such a debate, they could easily be getting 60,000 for every single game. So it is remarkable.
Yeah, every single England game, yeah.
Every single England game, yeah. So it does feel like a little bit of a wasted opportunity to have it in some of their smaller stadiums. Because the Friday game against Northern Ireland is in Southampton as well, which is same sort of issue. And then if they get through, actually, I think the quarterfinal they'll be in, it'll be in either Brighton if they finish first, and if they finish second, which of course, and tonight's game will dictate that, it'll be in Brentford, which is a really small stadium.
I think the idea is to spread it around, you know, grow the interest around the country, give people a chance to watch, which you could argue maybe should be done more for men's teams as well when the tournament is at home, but you think it would make more sense to give the maximum amount of people the chance to see them, even if that meant being in London or maybe Old Trafford the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, they've picked the stadiums, obviously, because they made realistic assessments of the potential numbers. But sometimes it feels like they've zoomed out too much there. I mean, it's one of those cases as well where, same with men's tournaments, and let's not forget, actually, Euro 96 often didn't have, I mean, it was a great, I mean, watching footage of that great game between Croatia and Denmark, where Suker was amazing recently, and the crowd actually is pretty poor at it, which is amazing to think now. But as we, like, what they do with all these tournaments is, because they have to have the logistics so in place so far in advance, is, you know, they pick the stadium so far out, every game is assigned a stadium, and then basically it's just a case of slotting the draws into those games. Where this is a case, and because of the evolving nature of the Women's Euros, where even Wednesday's game was a record, It felt like they could have done with a more pragmatic attitude and actually picked some of the stadiums to be used after the games have been in place, because it does feel ridiculous to have some of the absolute biggest games in some of the smaller stadiums. Mm. And that does feel a wasted opportunity. I mean, the other side of this, of course, is with this tournament, and obviously, I suppose, because the nature of my job and how ultimately how completely domineering the top level of the men's game is. Just, I mean, how all consuming the Premier League and Champions League are. I don't do that that much women's football, but I have been kind of finding myself thinking, I mean, as part of the evolution of women's football itself, it's also good that we should be actually discussing what the tournament is. And you try not to get too bogged down in all the wider discussions about its place and its status, because what we're actually seeing, of course, is quite a good and quite a really healthily competitive tournament here, with tonight's game being a pretty clear example of that. Because it is probably, given England have beaten Austria, given Northern Ireland are, you know, it's their first tournament here, they're an evolving team themselves. This is pretty much a shootout for top spot tonight.
With top players on both teams. Like we talked a bit about Norway on Friday's podcast, but Ada Hegerberg's back after being in self-imposed exile. Why am I writing a tabloid newspaper headline there? She didn't want to play for the team for a number of years because she felt they weren't being treated fairly by the association. That seems to be sorted now. She's back. She played well the other day. Caroline Graham Hansen. They've got a bunch of amazing forwards, Norway. So they're great to watch. This is the game if people, this is one of the big games at the group stage for people to get into.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, as you mentioned, Norway's array of attacking England. So, I mean, it's one of those games basically where both sides have not just a high calibre of attackers, but a really good array of different styles of attackers that should make the game, like, it should give it a real spark. The one thing that's been a slight criticism of England to win that, and one of the minor issues with someone who's obviously a really accomplished coach in Weigman, is basically that for all England's creativity in terms of, like, Kirby in particular, who I thought was absolutely brilliant on Wednesday, but there have been issues about her fitness levels and whether she can last more than an hour. Stanway as well, is that they resort a little bit too often to to sending it to me. And it was something really noticeable even in the Austria game, the amount of times they get it wide and swing it in. And it was Kirby only that really offered any sort of real variation within that with the two amazing passes. And, I mean, given how Norway play, I mean, I suppose the hope is maybe a bit more variation with England, but also maybe England as well. It's one of those classic cases of tournament football where the opening game, they were okay. They got the win, which is all that matters. But I think it did feel like the extent of the build-up to this tournament did have an effect. There was a few nerves in the show, particularly in the last 10 minutes, and they'll want to kick on for that and offer a bit more. But of course, most of all, they'll want to win and I suppose keep up the momentum that does feel like it's gathering around this team at the moment.
What about Chelsea then, Miguel? What have you made of the rebuilding job that they're doing this summer under the new ownership?
Well, I think there's an acceptance right now that I've been speaking to a lot of people over this the last 2 weeks, and I'm doing a big piece on it this week. The changeover at Chelsea, and they've got pretty clearly defined plans. The Bowley ownership and Clearlake, and from the way I've been speaking to people, one of the views is they actually believe that for all Chelsea's success over the last 15 years, and I suppose the amount of money that Abramovich spent in pursuit of that success, you know, money of course that has a very different context now. But there was almost a view that Chelsea actually didn't maximise what they were, which is one of the most famous and upwardly mobile clubs in London. I think the current group, they want to put in a completely different recruiting model, which is something much more like what Liverpool do. I look, just from speaking to people, not just in the club, but even outside, there's almost a belief that recruitment in football actually, there are huge opportunities within the Premier League themselves because of how so many clubs are run. And that Liverpool, which is obviously analytics-based but building into what Klopp specifically wants, are one of the few clubs that optimise everything they do. And Chelsea wants to pursue a similar model to that. And one of the consequences of that, and it's something relevant to what you said at the top about where they were last summer and why they never kicked on, is to basically bring in Thomas Tuchel much more. Because, I mean, the way it had worked previously with Chelsea, and the way it pretty worked with every Chelsea manager, was they had a list of targets. Tuchel was given some say in kind of circular discussions, or the manager was given some say, but ultimately, to a greater degree, they had signings imposed upon them. Whereas, and it's amazing when this is spelled out so clearly how obvious it seems, but this is the way football is. Say at Liverpool, what's actually happened is basically Klopp goes to their transfer committee or whatever description they're using these days, says what positions he wants, and more specifically, what type of qualities he wants for those positions. The recruitment team then go off, find a series of names, bring them to Klopp. If he doesn't like them, they go back again. I mean, Klopp is obviously willing to dialogue, but it's much more, I suppose, it's a situation where the manager is much more integrated, and it's much more kind of, I suppose it's quite an independent process in that way. And Chelsea want to do much more on that, or much more along those lines. And I suppose one of the knock-ons of that is we won't have a situation again where Tuchel has a player he doesn't especially...
Hang on, what about Ronaldo? I'm sorry to cut across. This has been in the back of my mind throughout your entire answer here. This all sounds great, and I think some of the signings they look like they're making are really smart, like Raheem Sterling. But, I mean, Ronaldo is literally the antithesis of everything you're talking about there.
Well, I was going to come to this. So, Tuchel basically never really liked Lukaku. Or not that he never really liked him, he just didn't really see him as a fit for his type of football. And that became an issue as the season went on. And he's obviously made this clear to the new hierarchy. It was a source of tension between himself and the old Chelsea hierarchy, who are pretty much all gone now in the summer's changes. Marina Granovskaya and Cech are both leaving. But it also means that, to be honest, they haven't given a completely concrete decision yet, but I'd be very surprised if they sign Ronaldo, just for all these reasons. Now, the one thing that's always considered with Ronaldo in this regard, I wrote this last week in a piece, and even an update on Friday about the situation is, I mean, just because it's Mendes obviously going to clubs, and if you are presented with a chance to sign Ronaldo for almost nothing, and you're a new ownership, people will listen. But Chelsea's stance is they want to give Tuchel the decision. Tuchel, from what I've heard, this is ultimately the issue with Ronaldo at this stage of his career. Even if you go into the back and forth, as you have so much in the podcast, about whether he's, you know, whether it's of net benefit to a team or a net cost, so many people in football, even like right up to the most elite idealistic coaches, they'll see Ronaldo and go, well, there is 20 goals there. Maybe, just maybe, I can latch him into my system. And while we're trying to put other plans in place, he can give us those goals to bail us out for the time being. That's ultimately what everyone thinks. And it's I had a reference to this in a piece I did about Ronaldo during the week, that even in situations, like I was just talking to someone who worked with him at Juventus, and even in situations where they know that Ronaldo's an issue, they've been frustrated with how he is. Like, there's so many stories when he was at Juventus, when Sarri was trying to put in, like, obviously do lots of shape work, and Sarri's football, because it requires integration and players kind of to play off almost instinct with each other from so much repetition, he needs basically to be working with 11 players on the pitch all the time. But with Ronaldo, he couldn't do that. He had to compromise basically working with 10 while Ronaldo went off and did his own exercises, because it was just pointless. He just wouldn't get involved, or he was just useless to those shape sessions. The stories of him basically in the middle, you know, Sarri, and I believe this was an issue with Rangnick as well, Sarri would be trying to impose some sort of system that would deepen the players, you know, basically make them better players. And, you know, you'd have Ronaldo kicking balls away saying, this is shit. But even despite all of that, afterwards, one of the coaches would put them, would you still be willing to work with Ronaldo? And the answer was, well, I'd have to sit down and have a discussion with him. So that's ultimately, and this is all we've got to come down to. All that said, I would be surprised if Tuchel goes for it. I think from speaking to people at the end of last week, it seems Tuchel is of a mind to not do it. The other side of that, of course, is that while United, when some reports came out on Thursday that United would be privately open to a sale, the club were quite proactive in just repeating the stance, he's absolutely not for sale. While he can kind of, I mean, that even that, might, as strong as their stance was, even that, I suppose, comes down to a matter of interpretation and all these things, because it's all a bit of a power play, especially as they're about to go on a tour to Thailand, which he wasn't going to go on, but they have accepted his private family reason for not going. And from what I've told, there is a genuine issue that hasn't been mentioned out of privacy, obviously. But even if you think that United might actually be willing to sell, I'm still not sure they'd be willing to sell to another English club, especially one that are pretty much a direct rival in Chelsea, just because of all the potential knock-on effects.
I'd say that, I don't know. I think it'd be like, if everyone's as confident as we seem to be, that Ronaldo is not, like,
you're
Chelsea
injecting the poison directly into an opponent's dressing room.
That's the way to phrase it, Murph. That's probably the way to phrase it. There's no way Tuchel is signing Chelsea. He's literally seen what has happened with Lukaku. He couldn't do that trick with Lukaku of getting him into the system. And Lukaku, I would have thought, would be a player be a bit more willing to, you know, he's not quite on the Ronaldo level of superstardom. He's a lot younger as well, and it didn't work. I don't want to spend the whole, we did spend most of Monday's podcast talking about Ronaldo. We probably shouldn't go down all the way down that road today, but Murph, I think Murph's point sums it up. Murph, I know you wanted to ask about Sterling. I think Sterling for around 50 million is pretty good.
Yeah, all the stuff that you've been saying there, Miguel. I mean, Raheem Sterling very much does fit the bill, and it's, you know, under £50 million for a 27-year-old who, you know, I mean, I kind of raise my eyes to heaven when I hear the, you know, can he adapt to the Premier League? Raheem Sterling has been in the Premier League for 10 years, and he's a very, very good Premier League player. For under £50 million, that seems like a very nice bit of business to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and the only reason anyone could think it anyway high, I suppose, is because he only has a year left on his contract. But I mean, even if it came down to that, we're still talking about 40 million. I think you're completely right. When you stand back, we're talking about a really proven Premier League attacker and goal scorer who's basically approaching the prime years of his career, still just the right side of it because he's 27. Probably has at least 3 or 4 years left. I think it's a really good signing. Gives Chelsea something different as well in an attack that had become, I mean, yeah, again, related to some of those issues with Lukaku. It's the one area of Tuchel's team that has never completely clicked. And Sterling, I think one of the big reasons they've been specifically interested in Sterling is because of the fluidity he gives the team. And it's an interesting one in that regard as well, because one of the other points he's going to make about Chelsea, and that is Sterling is a no-brainer signing in a situation where Chelsea are, whatever about their plans, they're still trying to work out how they conduct the market and how they conduct their recruitment in a situation while they don't have everything in place. Because, yeah, for this time next year, they'd plan to have a complete transfer infrastructure in place, something close to Liverpool. And along those lines, they from what I've been told, the reports about strong interest in Michael Edwards, Liverpool's very well-respected outgoing director of football, they're true. They've also been talking to the guy at Sporting Lisbon, whose name escapes me now, and who's someone who would work alongside the manager in that regard. But for the moment, they kind of have to make do. And that has meant that Todd Boehly has been involved in a lot of decisions. Now, some people in football have actually, there's almost been a view that they can potentially take advantage of Chelsea this summer because of that. And that Boehly has no experience in football. And it could potentially be a bit of a mess this year. But what's actually happened, from what I've been told so far, is that, I mean, Boehly would willingly accept. He doesn't know that much about football, but what's happened then is actually they're using a lot of people for consultation and advice. So ultimately, that Boehly is at least very well informed those decisions, and they're pretty insistent on not being taken for a ride in any sort of transfer. So an example of that is basically, from what I've been told, you know, Milan basically felt they could get Hakim Ziyech for next to nothing, just because Chelsea are going through changes. And because there is a bit like, there's obviously this a degree of uncertainty with the changeover and how late in the season it happened. But Chelsea are adamant, no, if Milan want Ziyech, they're going to have to pay and pay properly, which is why that deal might be in some doubt. Equally, on the other side of it, Tuchel does like Ziyech as a moments player, but Chelsea do need, They want to reshape the squad. I think they do want to raise some funds as well. There's probably about 3 or 4 players like Ziyech who, if they got the right offer, they would be available for transfer. But yeah, for them, they've got pretty solid plans that come from this, I suppose, what is a new model of football now, which is very American influence, very analytics based. But for the moment, they I think they've accepted this summer is going to be a bit erratic, and they have to have a slightly out there approach. But that's actually interesting.
We'll put the numbers plan, we'll put the database driven model in place next summer. This summer, let's sign Ronaldo. Seems to be the thing. What about Frankie de Jong then? Is that likely to happen?
Yeah, from what I was told on Friday, and I wrote this, United are basically relaxed about where they were, where they are, and standing to the ground, especially given everything that's going on at Barcelona at the moment, where he's owed 17 million in deferred wages. But I think while United have they've agreed a deal with Barcelona, they've agreed most of the principles, I think I can't see them budging from their position. So it ultimately comes down to, I suppose for want of a better phrase, Barca almost forcing De Jong out. It keeps being put to me that will eventually happen. Personally, and just going off my own gut feeling, I'd have it at about 50-50. It doesn't feel like... I think De Jong has accepted, obviously, his future in Barca is in doubt. He's had Ten Hag onto him. But ultimately, there's just this kind of remaining reluctance to go to United. If you're trying to build a new era and your marquee signing in that first summer, who the manager sees as so essential to your approach, is someone who doesn't really want to be there. I mean, I don't think it's ever worked out that well in the recent history of football. It's felt like there's about a week where United were linked to a new Ajax player or former Ajax player every day. Fair enough, it's a degree of it's got almost a show of faith in Ten Hag in his first summer to give him exactly what he wants. But the only problem with that is that's actually happened with every single Manchester United manager so far since Ferguson. United's recruitment approach isn't currently guided by any sort of overall plan, independent of kind of what short-term whims or short-term guides. And now, again, something we've heard a lot about United this summer is this is the start of a new era, similar to Chelsea. There will be changes in the future, although we haven't seen as many direct effects of that yet. But it also points to this, something I think that from what I've been told, that the new Chelsea ownership have so been attuned to, which is that ultimately, really, there's two, at the top end of European football, there's sort of two major transfer models. One is something relatively old-fashioned, which is based on a network of agents and personal relationships, and the other is, and it's increasingly American/German influence, because really a lot of American owners have seen what Leipzig have done, how cost effective it's been, and tried to replicate that. And a clear example of that is actually Serie A. 8 or 9 of the league's clubs are now owned by American owners. What it's actually doing in the longer term is making Serie A a really high pressing league, like the German league, that even some of the clubs that aren't run that way have to adapt to. And of course, you know, Atalanta have almost been the Leipzig of Serie A in that way that everyone has followed. And of course, you know, had a similar Champions League run to Leipzig in 2020. And basically Chelsea want to do this on a higher scale in England, and think there's actually real opportunity there, because there aren't too many clubs that follow this model in England. Everyone will say they use analytics, of course, but it's about the extent of it, and about, I suppose, how sharp some of these bodies are, or how sharp some of these recruitment structures are. And for the moment, we're still not really seeing that at United. And it feels like from that perspective, even United are further to go than Chelsea in that regard. It's something that this summer, and what's happened at Chelsea and what's happened at United, could kind of prove an interesting case study going forward and how these recruitment models work. And of course, then explaining what happens on the pitch.
Miguel, enjoy England against Norway tonight. Thanks for that today.
Cheers, lads. Thank you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations. They are amazing. Stupendous.
All right, that is your football podcast for today. Our Monday GA show is out now. What a show it is, featuring Seanie O'Shea. We have got a Seanie O'Shea audio bed of his free kick to win at the death, featuring some amazing commentary from RTÉ and Radio Kerry. And Marcus, I put that on Twitter as well, put a video to it on Twitter. So it looks, do you put the video to the music? You probably put the music and the commentaries to the video, but it's there now if you want to have a look. I'm sure Dublin fans won't, but Kerry supporters probably will.
Just watch it on repeat, on.
There's the All-Ireland Hurling Final to look forward to during the week on the World Service. We've got Shane Horgan tomorrow with Scotty Stevenson to look ahead to what could be a series win for Ireland in New Zealand. Oh my God, so much going on. You can sign up now to hear those shows on secondcaptains.com. Don't forget, all episodes of the podcast are ad-free if you become a member for £5 a month plus VAT. The Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks for listening today. Thank you, Ciarán.
Thank you, Owen.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuader of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.